Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading from the Big Bend Sentinel. Marfa Vigil commemorates loss of Black lives. Read by Melanie. Article by Abby Perot, June 3rd, 2020. Marfa. A crowd gathered Sunday night at the Presidio County Courthouse lawn to join a last-minute candlelight vigil in honor of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Tony McDade, and Ahmaud Arbery, four Black Americans who were recently killed while unarmed. Protests over the killing of unarmed Black individuals at the hands of law enforcement have spread across the country, ignited by the death of George Floyd, who died after a Minneapolis police officer held a knee on Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes. The filmed incident has stirred up protests, calling for the arrest of the other three officers who witnessed the death, and more broadly, police reform. On Wednesday, the other three officers, who had already been fired, were charged with aiding and abetting second-degree murder. In a place where there are few Black community members, De Leyva said that was all the more reason she felt the need to show up. Leyva, 22, was born and raised in Alpine and returned to town from her schooling in San Antonio because of coronavirus. Leyva, wearing a bandana face covering, held up a sign that read, "Justice for George Floyd," and "Please, I can't breathe," a quote from Floyd and others like Eric Garner while held in lethal chokeholds by police officers. Organizers Megan Garrity and Vance Knowles, both Marfa residents, decided to organize the event after seeing each other on Saturday by happenstance. "We have to do something," Garrity recalls Knowles saying. The friends were both upset by Floyd's death. Garrity contacted government officials to get approval for the public gathering and had a city official reach out to law enforcement. Knowles connected with Gory Smelly of Marfa Recording Company to provide the audio setup. On Sunday, protesters wore masks and sat in distance clusters around the lawn. The vigil opened with the Martin Luther King Jr. speech excerpt called "We Must Learn to Love Each Other," chosen by Knowles. Two Nina Simone songs played, "Black is the Color of My True Love's Hair," and "I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free." Speaking to the vigil and the larger movement in the U.S., Leyva said, "It's just devastating to see this, but it's also a good thing that it's happening. We need this a lot. A lot of people came out. It's good to see that we have support out here." As a child, Leyva said racism that was directed at her went in one ear and out the other because I was so little. Leyva attended with her mother, Gina Leyva, who said she was there to first and foremost support her daughter. "And of course the community, we need this. Marfa, Alpine, the Tri-County needs it because racism does exist," Gina said. "In Alpine, there was a lot of segregation back in the day. It is what it is, but we can all make a change. Small changes lead to big changes." Gina Leyva said she has seen racism and at times ignored racism. "It's just something that I think as minorities we tend to ignore because our voice isn't heard. We are not heard. It took this to open and shed some light on everything. A young man lost his life for something so senseless that shouldn't have happened, and ignited this. This is where we're at in 2020. Concluding the event, Garrity gave a short statement to the crowd, beginning, "I so appreciate you being here in a peaceful expression to honor George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and Tony McDade, four unarmed Black Americans who lost their lives in the past month at the hands of law enforcement or racist citizens. I thank the police officers of Marfa for being kind professionals who serve our community and protect us," Garrity read. "But the truth is, thousands of unarmed Black people lose their lives at the hands of law enforcement in this country every year, with a very small percentage of officers being charged or sentenced. Garrity called attendees to action, be it voting or being active in the community, and implored, let's uplift. Let's be humble. Let's open our hearts and let's stand up against racism and injustice when we see it. Area residents placed candles and signs, including days, on the sidewalk leading to the courthouse steps as the event drew down. I think it took so many deaths of African Americans to get to this point, and it shouldn't have. It should have happened the first time. It should have stopped then, Gina said. A lot of law enforcement got away with it and continued to get away with it. I backed the blue as well, she added. I don't think Marfa is a violent place. We're not in a violent place. I think law enforcement could have come out, or someone should have represented the department, whether the sheriff's office or the police department, just in support for everything, because those are his brothers that did this, unfortunately. I'm sure they don't acknowledge him, but come show your face, Leyva said. We want to see you. We want to talk to you. You're a public figure. Come out and support what's going on in your community. Where's the county attorney? Where's the judge? Where's everybody at? I think this is the time where they need to be here and have everybody come together. In an interview this week, Presidio County Sheriff Danny Dominguez said his department kept a distance to let them do what they wanted to do. It was peaceful, it was great, and we respect that in every avenue. What happened to George Floyd was wrong, and the guy deserves to go to jail for a long time. Marfa Police Chief Steve Marquez also weighed in after the event. The chief said, I wanted to go to the vigil. I just wasn't too sure. It's kind of that whole deal where you don't want to ruin it. He'd heard about the event from a city official, but said, I didn't want anybody to be even slightly intimidated by having an officer there, because we wanted to keep it as peaceful as possible and also let people express how they feel. Regarding Floyd's death, Marquez said the actions shown by that police officer were horrendous, saying, it is not something that any officer that I know or went to the academy with. That's not tactics that are shown to us at any training. That officer showed a blatant disregard for human life. Marquez called it a setback for departments that have gone the extra mile to make that connection and get that cooperation and have that relationship with our community. For something like this to happen, it sets us back. Discussing the peaceful gathering, Marquez said, myself and the Marfa Police Department, we're with them right there. And if there's another one, you'll find us right there. This is something that really is a terrible situation, and those officers should be held accountable. At the end of the event, as Gina and Day Leyva were about to leave, Gina reflected on Floyd, remarking that his name, his face, and this moment would be in the history books. This is an eye-opener for every age, every race. I think that 2020 started off hard for everyone. And this is the half point of the year. Can't we all come together and close out the year in peace and harmony? Coronavirus, live updates for the Big Bend region. Read by Melanie. Article by Abby Perot, Stephen Paulson. Last updated, June 3rd, 3:51 p.m. Tri-County confirmed case count. Presidio County, 1 active. Brewster County, 1 recovered. Jeff Davis County, 0 confirmed. Tri-County area physicians have said there are presumed positive cases in the region, as some cases which doctors assume are coronavirus are not being tested. Texas continues to be one of the worst-ranked states for testing per capita. Nearby counties cases counts. Pecos, 103. Reeves, 7. Ward, 1. Crane, 25. Ector, 167. Midland, 137. Hudspeth, 2. El Paso, 2,872. Valverde, 21. 1,734 Texans have died from the virus. 68,271 have tested positive for COVID-19, and around 1.5 million people in the state have been tested. We are staying in regular contact with health authorities, schools, businesses, and other officials, and will update regularly with timestamps for time-sensitive updates. Pecos County coronavirus case count skyrocket amid outbreak at prison. Article by Stephen Paulson, June 3rd, 2020, read by Melanie. Fort Stockton, there are signs of a growing coronavirus outbreak in Pecos County as the number of cases skyrockets at a local prison and continues to increase in the broader community. It's the first time coronavirus cases have surged in far west Texas outside of metro areas like El Paso and Midland, Odessa. Fort Stockton is the gateway to the Big Bend and the last stop on the Interstate 10 before westbound drivers turn off for Marathon, Alpine, Presidio, and Marfa. In a news release on Tuesday, Brewster County officials took note of the rise, urging residents to limit travel to Fort Stockton if at all possible. We recommend exercising caution if making trips into Fort Stockton or other areas within Pecos County. The news release stated, we recommend minimizing travel to the area. As recently as last Thursday, Pecos had just 28 cases, but after the state reported dozens of new cases at local prisons all at once, the number more than tripled over the ensuing days. At press time on Wednesday, 102 cases were reported on the state's map. The county has reported no deaths or hospitalizations from the virus as recently as Monday, according to Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster. A majority of the cases have come from just one facility in Fort Stockton, the Texas Department of Criminal Justice N5 unit, which at press time has at least 87 coronavirus cases, including active cases in at least 68 inmates and 6 employees. 12 employees and 1 inmate at the facility have recovered. The city's James Lenoir unit has also confirmed cases. 3 confirmed cases, 2 active and 1 recovered, both involving employees. In a town of around 8,000 people, those 2 facilities can house more than 2,000 prisoners. Most at risk for infection are other prisoners in those units, but as employees clock in and out, there are also signs the contagion is spreading beyond the walls. Of Pecos's 28 cases on Thursday, at least 13, over a third, involved local residents who were employees of the units, according to reporting by the Fort Stockton Pioneer. And even those numbers likely hide the true extent of the prison's outbreak, with some employees commuting to work at the facility, meaning confirmed cases may be counted in other counties. The cases were found as a result of expanding testing at Texas prisons, especially for people who don't have symptoms. In a news release from early May, the agency said it was deploying significant testing aimed at finding asymptomatic patients in the prison system. The agency continues to be agile in its response to the pandemic, the news release added. At press time, around 66,500 Texas prisoners had been tested, according to the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. What's less clear, though, is how long it took state officials to report those rises to Pecos County. When state coronavirus figures for the county shot up on Friday, county officials pretty well figured out it had to be TDCJ, Schuster said in a phone interview on Monday. TDCJ had employed a team to local prisons to test inmates, Schuster said, but it wasn't until Monday that he learned for sure that cases were tied to prisons. TDCJ does not share those figures with us, so we can stay on top of it, Schuster said. They didn't call and tell me. They're pretty tight-lipped. In interviews on Tuesday, TDCJ officials acknowledged they weren't sharing inmate infection stats from prison facilities with local officials in those counties. Instead, TDCJ operates like its own local health authority and reports figures directly to the state, said Jeremy Dessel, Director of Communications for the agency. The Texas Department of State Health Services did not respond to a request for comment seeking more information on how long it took state health officials to report those figures to counties. But Dessel said the turnaround took long enough that by the time the county officials learned about cases in prisons, those cases were generally speaking already past quarantine times and not active cases anymore. The Big Bend Sentinel has previously covered state reporting issues around coronavirus testing and statistics. Last week, for example, we reported that state officials took days to add positive coronavirus cases in Presidio and Hudspeth counties to their state tracking system. Those issues appear to also be at play here. But rather than just slowing reporting times for new cases, this particular problem could ultimately artificially inflate case counts in an area, Dessel said. If local officials are taking information about our facilities and adding it to the counties, then they're double counting those cases, he said. Pecos County Judge Judge Schuster told the Fort Stockton Pioneer he was hopeful that TDCJ and local county numbers were not being conflated. After all, he noted, prisoners aren't out in public where they might seek additional testing, but employees are, and it's easy to imagine scenarios where a prison employee could get tested at work only to be separately tested by local health workers or the National Guard. Further complicating matters, at least 7 in 5 employees who tested positive were later determined to be El Paso County residents. Without more transparency from DSHS, especially when it comes to reporting delays, it's hard to say how county officials could avoid this problem altogether. The surging case counts at the N5 unit are just the latest in a rash of infections at Texas prisons, where experts have long warned that close quarters and inadequate hygiene procedures could serve as incubators for the disease. At press time on Wednesday, around 6,600 Texas prisoners have been confirmed to have the virus, and 44 of the state's 106 prison units, including both N5 and Lena, are under precautionary medical lockdown. At least 70 prisoners across the state have died. Local candidate blames sabotage and controversy over racist tweets. The Republican candidate for Brewster County Sheriff became the subject of a Change.org petition asking for his removal from the race after racist tweets resurfaced. Article by Stephen Paulson, June 3, 2020, read by Melanie. Alpine. Devin Portillo, the Republican candidate for Brewster County Sheriff, became the subject of a Change.org petition asking for his removal from the local sheriff's race after tweets from 2013 on Portillo's Twitter account resurfaced this week. The tweets in question used the N-word, along with derogatory racial stereotypes. Portillo confirmed the account was his, but suggested the circulating tweets had been doctored or that his account had been hacked. But the Big Bend Sentinel found evidence that at least one of the offensive tweets had been posted on social media platform that year, raising doubts about Portillo's assertions that they are a recent political hit. The petition, which was started by an anonymous person on Monday, cited ongoing civil unrest over police killings of Black people and Portillo's alleged long history of racism and discrimination in calling for him to be removed from the ballot. It is not justifiable to have this man remain on the ballot for such an important elected official position, the petition read. Alpine does not condone racism or discrimination. At press time, it had garnered over 3,300 signatures. In a statement posted on his Facebook campaign page Sunday night, Portillo said he had not written the controversial tweets posted to his Twitter account and that how this message was created is beyond my knowledge. In a follow-up statement on Monday, Portillo again denied making the statements and described the tweets as political sabotage. Portillo later deleted both posts. In an interview, Portillo acknowledged that the offending Twitter account belonged to him and that he had deleted it in response to the controversy. "I don't know if I got hacked," he said, "but by no means, no shape or form, am I prejudiced against anybody." The Big Bend Sentinel uncovered a contemporaneous tweet from 2013 in which another person retweeted one of the account's uses of the N-word, suggesting the slur was posted to Portillo's account as early as 2013. When presented with that evidence, Portillo declined to comment. "We're not commenting on anything else," he said Tuesday. Portillo did acknowledge another social media post was his, a Facebook post from 2015 in which he said he was disappointed with the Supreme Court's ruling that gay marriage was constitutional. In the post, he added that American soldiers were involved in international conflicts, quote, so that we can live freely, unquote, and, quote, not so man can lay with man, unquote. In a social media post on Monday, the Brewster County Sheriff's Office stressed that Portillo, a former employee, has no current affiliation with Sheriff Dodson or the Brewster County. Portillo worked at the Sheriff's Office for less than a year, from October 2018 until August 2019, according to the social media post from the Sheriff's Office. In his interview, Portillo said he had been forced to resign, but was never given a clear answer from the Sheriff's Office as to why. In a follow-up interview on Monday, Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson declined to comment on Portillo's departure, describing it as a non-public personnel matter. But he said that the Sheriff's Office wanted to make it clear that Portillo was not an employee. The Texas Secretary of State's office said an online petition is not grounds to remove Portillo's name from the ballot. Only special circumstances allow for removal, including if Portillo moved outside the country. Candidates may remove themselves from the ballot up to 74 days before general election. In a phone call on Tuesday, Portillo said he was still in the race. Film Festival will feature a pilot episode by former Alpine High School graduate. Art by Big Ben Sentinel, read by Melanie. Los Angeles. Former West Texas resident and Alpine High School graduate, 2001, Zane McWilliams, has been accepted into the independent pilot competition at Series Fest. The event is an award-winning annual festival based in Denver, Colorado, and dedicated to showcasing the best and boldest in episodic storytelling. We are extremely honored to be a part of Series Fest, and I owe a huge thank you to the actors, crew, and everyone who supported us, said McWilliams, who wrote, directed, and helped produce Wizards. Everything I write is rooted in Texas. You can't shake that. I find all my characters start off talking in Texas accents, and then I go back and translate the dialogue, McWilliams said. Series Fest is a nonprofit organization dedicated to championing artists at the forefront of episodic storytelling. The annual festival, June 18th to 24th, will showcase Zane's television series, Wizards. The series follows a crew of D&D players' lives that get thrown into disorderly alliances when new members disrupt the ranks from surprising and bullish avenues. Wizards will compete for various awards, including Best Pilot and the Distinguished Audience Award. This year, Series Fest will be online and on demand. The pilot will be juried by established industry executives, and selections will have an online debut. Please check out more of Zane's creative endeavors on Instagram and Facebook. To view the trailer for Wizards, visit YouTube. Lastly, for more information on how to buy passes to view the full pilot, visit Series Fest. Earlier this year, Wizards was also accepted into a Cinequest, a California-based film and creativity festival. With temperature checks and assigned seating, Marfa ISD holds in-person graduation. Article by Stephen Paulson, June 3rd, 2020, read by Melanie. Marfa. As the coronavirus pandemic upends life around the globe, some aspects of Marfa's graduation ceremony this year were very different. The ceremony was held outdoors in keeping with guidelines from the Texas Education Agency. Attendees sat 6 feet apart to conform with social distancing rules. Some wore face masks in the school spirit color, purple. Entrance into the event was staggered to prevent crowding. Administrators stood at the gate of Martin Field to check temperatures, and in lieu of in-person remarks, many graduation speakers remained seated while their speeches played over loudspeakers. In other ways, though, the 2019-2020 graduation ceremony was no different than previous years. Students seem alternatively sad and excited to be leaving school. Parents turn teary-eyed with pride as they watch their children take a formal step into adulthood. One of those parents was Yolanda Gerardo, a Marfa ISD board member and mother of salutatorian Isabella Morales. She was thankful the school was able to organize in-person graduation but was sad about the loss of other traditions from family visitors to post-graduation parties. Her advice to Isabella, who felt the same way, was to realize that graduation would be such a small portion in your big realm of life. As salutatorian, Morales was one of the few people to give an in-person speech. It was so heartfelt, Gerardo said. I think everybody was crying. The pride and the honor I felt being her parent was not affected one bit by this COVID situation, she added. I was so touched by her speech. The event kicked off around 6 p.m. Although most of the graduates remained seated during the main ceremony, many still got to participate with speeches and songs played over a speaker system. Kiana Gates, Harkrider, performed the national anthem. Miguel Barunda and Kimberly Zapata led the crowd in saying the pledge, while Alexis Maldonado and Kimberly Soto read the invocation. Samantha Jimenez and Brian Torres welcomed the crowd and made introductions. Elena Hernandez and Thais Chanez, meanwhile, gave a tribute to parents in both English and Spanish. You've been there for every accomplishment in our lives, Hernandez and Chanez said in pre-recorded speeches. With your love and support, we will be able to get through the rest of the book successfully. Then it was time for the main speeches, starting with salutatorian Isabella Morales. She acknowledged the extraordinary, unprecedented circumstances of the event, but said she wanted to give a heartfelt thank you to parents and teachers. From the ABCs to the quadratic function, that's all you, she said. Morales said she and fellow students were at a pivoting point in our lives that would see them go on to careers in a variety of fields, even professional gamers. Noting that many in her generation were born shortly after 9/11, Morales said they had been tested from the start. The virus has stripped the last semester of our senior year from us, she said. But she urged her classmates to remember we are not alone and that the rough experiences had made us stronger people. Then, as Morales started to tear up, she once again gave thanks to her family members, including two of my ugly brothers. Gerard Forestal, the valedictorian, spoke next. His speech was shorter, but just as heartfelt. First, Forestal thanked administrators for accommodating an in-person graduation and giving students a break from quarantine. Even at this time, the heart of Martha is still beating strong, he said. To his fellow seniors, Forestal said, no matter what path you take, I hope you're happy. And he gave another round of thank yous to parents and school workers, including to the cafeteria faculty for feeding him. There were more speeches, including by senior sponsor and Martha head coach Arturo Alferez, administrators in masks and gloves handed out diplomas. Ruben Ortiz Watts led the ring ceremony, while Avery Beltran led the tassel ceremony, and Aliana Hernandez and Angelica Quinones gave the final benediction. Finally, Adonica Marquez led the class in the senior circle ceremony, though it was a little different this year. Walking out to the far end of the field, graduates held onto a rope and danced in a circle. The rope was marked every 6 feet so that students could still be together while conforming to social distancing guidelines. And as they danced, the song My Wish by the pop country band Rascal Flatts played in the background. And with that, the ceremony was over. Chaperones led attendees off the field to keep them from crowding the exit. One of those graduates on Friday was Elena Hernandez. With high school now behind her, she'll be attending Texas A&M University in San Antonio, where she plans to study education. Hernandez said losing the end of her senior year had been definitely disappointing. Her class had missed out on big traditions, including prom and a senior trip, as well as smaller ones, including softball games or just spending a couple final months horsing around together. Since we couldn't interact with people, graduation wasn't as emotional as it could have been, she said. In the end, though, Hernandez said she was grateful Marfa ISD still had a graduation, even if it did feel different than in past years. A lot of other schools couldn't do any graduation at all, she said.
Hello, this is Sonia reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, May 28th, 2020. Comanche Springs Pool to Open June 4th by Steve Fountain. Comanche Springs Pool will open to the public on Thursday, June 4th, with three periods of operation Tuesdays through Sundays. The first period will run from noon until 3 p.m., the second from 3 to 6 p.m., and the third from 6 to 8 p.m. Each period will be limited to 125 people. The cost per session will be $1 for children and $2 for adults. In keeping with guidelines from the state regarding pools and the COVID-19 virus, the chloride level will be checked several times each day to ensure safety. In addition, lifeguards and pool staff will be enforcing general pool safety as well as social distancing. Precinct 2 Commissioner Robert Gonzalez said that only packaged food like candy, chips, and beverages will be sold at the pool this summer. Attendees may bring their own food into the complex. Ira Ann Sheffield Open. Precinct 3 Commissioner Mickey Jack Perry said the pools in Ira Ann and Sheffield were set to open by May 27. New 4-foot high screen fencing was approved at the May 26 Commissioner's Court meeting and should be installed by next week, Perry said. The fencing will serve as a windbreak to reduce dust and debris being blown into the pool, as also an added measure of privacy by obstructing the view of pool users from the parking areas. Lifeguards needed. Precinct 4 Commissioner Santiago Cantu said that he hopes to have the pools in Imperial and Cayonosa opened by Thursday, June 4, but that could be delayed unless lifeguards are hired. Anyone interested in working as a lifeguard may call Precinct 4 at 432-336-6281. Civic Center roof damaged by storm. Commissioners okay $128,000 for repairs. By Steve Fountain. The Pecos County Commissioners Court approved a $128,000 emergency repair to the roof of the Pecos County Civic Center at its May 26 regular meeting. A storm on May 12 included hail and high winds, which severely damaged portions of the two-layer metal roof. By passing the emergency measure, the commissioners were able to waive the traditional bid process and awarded the contract directly to Young Construction and Equipment. That company is currently on-site working on the remodel and expansion project to the Civic Center. The commissioners learned that, in addition to the roof having the two metal layers, it has a very slight slope, which makes it more vulnerable to hail damage. The bid from Young includes removal of the existing two layers of metal roofing, the installation of two synthetic felt layers that will be topped off by a metal roof. If hail goes through the metal layer, the two felt layers will be better able to absorb the impact and reduce potential damage. Since new roofing was already in the works for new restrooms and awnings as part of the remodel, Young Construction will simply extend the repaired roof over the new additions. The supplier of the roofing material is based out of Odessa, whereas the material from the previous roof comes out of Tennessee and has no local distributor willing to take on a project of less than $2 million. Materials should arrive in 3 weeks and repairs completed 3 weeks after that. The county's roof insurance has a $250,000 deductible, something that Judge Joe Schuster said the court would review ahead of renewal of the policy. The commissioners also granted Young Construction a 2-week extension to complete the Civic Center remodel from July 31st to August 14 due to supply chain disruptions due to the COVID-19 pandemic. In other actions, the commissioners approved the minutes of previous meetings, approved the creation of the Glenna Reinvestment Zone in order to cover land acquired and developed as part of the Getty 2 solar farm in the county. The site, west of Cayonosa near Tipton and Weatherby Roads, covers about 321 acres and will be home to a portion of the Getty 2 project in the Grace Reinvestment Zone, which is also home to the Getty 1 solar farm. Getty 1 will produce 250 megawatts of power, while Getty 2 will produce 200 megawatts. The county will collect $1,000 per megawatt per year. Approved an abatement agreement with TyJet Energy Project 2, adjusted to 200 megawatts from 250 megawatts. Approved a $500 per month lease agreement with Childs Corporation for the warehouse on Railroad Avenue property, commonly known as Mecobar Baroid Building. At its previous meeting, the lease was to be $1,500 per month, but extensive electrical work tied to the reconnecting of the building as well as needed repairs to the main door resulted in the lower rate. Childs will cover the cost of the needed repairs. Approved a $919.20 payment to Viper Energy due to an overpayment of taxes. Approving Tandy Yarbrough as election judge for Precinct 3 for any upcoming elections. Approved the extension of insurance for a Precinct 2 employee who is still recovering from a medical matter. The employee will pay his portion of the continued coverage. Approved Precinct 3 spending, $2,190.24 for netting and inside fencing around the county pools in Ira Ann and Sheffield. The funds were budgeted for pool loungers and chairs totaling $3,513. It is the same type of screening used in Kyanosa and Imperial. Approved acceptance of a $500 donation from 4C Oil and Gas Corporation to Imperial Public Library for the summer reading program. Approved a request from Pecos County Water Control and Improvement District No. 1 to cut 384 West 53rd Lane in Precinct No. 4 for a water line. While it was approved, discussion included how the district had said at a previous meeting that it would not request further cutting of roads for its projects. Cutting of a road weakens the long-term durability of the road surface and underlying base as opposed to boring. Approved a request from Whistler Pipeline LLC to bore beneath the Pecos County Freshwater System waterline, Section 107, Block 8, H&GN, Rye, in Precinct No. 4, with a 42-inch natural gas pipeline. Approved a request from Whistler Pipeline LLC to construct a temporary driveway/culvert on Watermelon Row, Section 12, Block 8, H&GNRR, in Precinct No. 4. Approved spending $39,791.70 to purchase 130 water meters and model 520R radio read MXUs with budgeted funds for the Pecos County Freshwater System. Approved the predator control report from USDA APHIS Wildlife Services totaling $3,675. Approved overtime, fund transfers, and accounts payable for Pecos County Memorial Hospital. In addition, CEO Betsy Briscoe said the installations of the hospital's new MRI unit would start on Monday, June 8. Accepted the reports from the county treasurer and auditor. Bittersweet Ceremony for Senior Class by Steve Fountain. It took 12 weeks for the members of the senior class of Fort Stockton High School to be back together on campus as the school held a socially distanced graduation ceremony on the football field of Panther Stadium on May 22nd. The soon-to-be graduates were last on campus together on March 6th, the last day of classes before spring break. However, the state closed all school campuses for the rest of the semester later in the month in favor of remote learning. The graduation brought a mix of emotions. Students were happy to actually have a live ceremony with their classmates, but that was tempered with social distancing measures. No hugs, high fives, or handshakes, as well as the realization that 12 weeks of campus life and senior memories vanished. It's so hard explaining, said Yasmin Marie Reyes. It's just sad to see it go. Now that this is our last time together as a class, we're like a family. I'm here at home. Ending his high school career on the football field and getting just a few minutes with his classmates was bittersweet for Eric Bislar, who was a starter on the Panther football team. Being on the field again, under the lights, I don't want it to end so soon, especially since I am trying to go into the service, Air Force. I'm not sure who I'll get to see before I leave. For valedictorian Rebecca Rodriguez, the ceremony was the first time she'd seen a lot of her classmates in person since March. It's been hard, she said. It's mostly been social media, so it was nice to be able to see everybody. Jesse Thomas Wilson was the last of the graduates to receive his diploma. It was pretty good, he said. I'm just glad I got to see all my classmates. By state guidelines, no rehearsal was held for the students. Nonetheless, the ceremony went smoothly. Students staged on the baseball field and assigned seats on the field and in the stands. From there, they formed a line and entered the stadium by the visitor's side of the field, walking up the track before turning onto the turf near midfield. Graduates were seated 6 feet apart on the football field and row by row walked up to the podium to receive their diploma as their names were read over the public address system. Parents and family, meanwhile, entered through the home side of the field. Each had a reserved seat in the stands, blocked off to allow for 6 feet of spacing among groups. Part of the visitors' stands were also used for family seating. All participants and attendees went through screening before entering the complex, with temperatures being taken and health questions asked. Three more COVID-19 cases in county now recovered, by Steve Fountain. Three more COVID-19 cases in Pecos County have exited quarantine and are now listed as recovered, bringing the county total to 13 recoveries. A total of 27 positive cases are connected to the county, with 14 still active. Another 9 positive cases tested positive in Pecos County but were assigned to El Paso County. 2 of those cases are now listed as recovered. As of May 26, the county has seen medical staff conduct 571 tests, with 398 coming back negative. Another 137 tests are pending results, including about 61 at the Focus Care site in Fort Stockton. The testing at Focus Care came in the wake of 21 positive cases at the Focus Care site in Crane, 16 patients and 5 staff. According to CBS 7, the first positive test was for an employee who was asymptomatic on the test day and traveled to Focus Care sites in Crane, Odessa, and Monahans. However, with more than 130 tests administered at the Fort Stockton location, all of the first 60-plus results have been negative. For the latest on COVID-19 news in Pecos County, including a complete list of cases, please check www.fortstocktonpioneer.com daily. Concert series resumes June 5th. The first local concert since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic is set for Zero Stone Park at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, June 5th, with Wayne West performing in the kickoff of the 2020 Live at Zero Stone concert series. The concert is free. Social distancing will be required whether attendees sit in the park or in cars parked around the site adjacent to the Pecos County Courthouse. The series continues June 19 with Brian Garrison and the Rainmakers. The Annie Riggs Museum Board will meet Friday, June 8 to discuss their annual concert series. Scholarships available for theater workshops. The Fort Stockton Community Theater has announced that scholarships are available for the Be Cool, Stay Cool Summer Theater Workshops during the month of June. The cost per student is $30 per 2-week session. Students that need financial help to be able to attend one of the sessions should call Alice Durskin at 432-336-3180. Students will learn to feel comfortable on stage before an audience and will learn to express themselves clearly in various characterizations. Students will use prepared scripts and storylines as well as creating their own material to perform. The workshops will be conducted by Susan Hall and Durskin. Session 1 will be Monday through Friday, June 1st through 12. Session 2 will be Monday through Friday, June 15 through 26. Students who have completed kindergarten through the end of 4th grade will attend a section from 1 to 3 p.m. each afternoon, while students who have completed 5th grade through the end of 8th grade will attend from 3 to 5 p.m. each afternoon. Only 10 students per section will be allowed. For more information and to register for the workshop, call Susan Hall at 432-360-6618 or Alice Durskin at 432-336-3180. Traffic stop leads results in 2 arrests. The Fort Stockton Police Department recovered 12 ounces of methamphetamines, 28 grams of marijuana, and a firearm after a traffic stop on May 21st. 2 male suspects were taken into custody and charged with possession of controlled substance, possession of marijuana, possession of a firearm by a felon, and unlawful carry of a weapon. According to the police, the stop occurred at about 11:38 a.m. on the 600 block of North Front Street. The police were assisted by the U.S. Border Patrol's K-9 unit. Obituaries in the Fort Stockton Pioneer, Thursday, May 28, 2020. Nancy Kuykendall Ellison. Nancy was born to Marguerite and John Bryce Kuykendall on May 13, 1929 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Following graduation from Odessa High School, Nancy attended Sol Ross State Teachers College, Alpine, finishing with a degree in English. She returned to Odessa to teach language arts in Crockett Junior High School. Nancy had met Fred Ellison Jr. in Sol Ross, where he was completing his 3rd college degree. She and Fred were members of the First Presbyterian Church. She in Odessa, he in his hometown of Fort Stockton. On December 21, 1950, the couple were married in the Odessa Presbyterian Church. Their son, John Frederick, was born in Fort Stockton, March 17, 1957. Graveside rites were officiated by the Reverend Dr. James R. Miles. Nancy is buried beside her beloved husband in the Ellison family plot, East Hill Cemetery, Fort Stockton. Immediate survivors are son John Frederick and wife Sandra, Lavernia, Texas, grandsons Nathan and wife Shaylin, Batesville, Arkansas, Cody, Amarillo, Texas, Stephen and wife Heather, Carlsbad, New Mexico, and three great-grandsons and one great-granddaughter. Memorials may be made to the Fort Stockton Public Library. Alpha Perling Gray. Alpha Perling Gray of Fort Stockton passed away Monday, May 18, 2020, at the age of 89. Perline was born on April 7, 1931, to Edwin and Alpha Hulster in Bowie, Texas. She married her husband Kenneth in 1947 and devoted her life to him for 73 years. Their family joyfully grew in 1949 when their son Kenneth Jr. was born. Perline is survived by her husband Kenneth Gray Sr., her son Kenneth Gray Jr., and wife Susan Gray, her grandchildren Randy and wife Susan Gray, Kyle Gray, Shauna Gray, Tanya Reynolds, and Kendra Gray Reed, and her husband Aaron, great-grandchildren Dustin Ryder, Orion, Corbin, Jordan, Riley, and Reese, her great-great-grandchildren Skylar and Kelton, and several nieces and nephews. Perline is preceded in death by her parents Edwin and Alpha Hulster, her brother Herman Hulster, and her sisters Hazel Smart and Flora Zen Vittori. Graveside services were held Friday, May 22, 2020, at East Hill Cemetery, Fort Stockton. Remembrances and condolences may be shared with the family at Heritage Funeral Home of the Big Bend.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, May 28th. Ward County logs first COVID-19 case. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The first COVID-19 case in Ward County was confirmed last Friday when a man was tested positive for the virus. He and his family have self-quarantined. The case is travel-related, and the man does not live in Ward County, but is currently residing here, which led the decision by DSHS to credit it to Ward County. EMS personnel from the Odessa Fire Department were in town yesterday and tested all 90 residents and staff at Monahan's Focused Care. The action was the result of an order from Texas Governor Greg Abbott that 100% of residents and staff at all nursing home facilities be tested. The directive suggested that fire departments would do the testing, quote, "That is not practical for a volunteer fire department. It was then thought our hospital employees could conduct the testing, but that was ruled out because of the risk to those employees, as they cannot afford to become infected and not be able to perform their prescribed duties here," County Judge Greg Holly said. As of Wednesday morning, 257 tests have been administered in Ward County, with 118 pending, 98 from the nursing home, with one confirmed case. Statewide, there have been 55,971 cases recorded in 228 counties, with 35,292 recovered and 1,527 deaths. Locally, 152 cases have been recorded in Ector County, with 99 recoveries and 5 deaths. Midland County has 125 cases with 12 deaths. Dawson County has reported 40 cases, Andrews County 27, Pecos County 27, Crane County 23 with 2 deaths, Reeves County with 13, and Winkler County with 3 reported cases. Swimming pools remain closed. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Ward County commissioners agreed to keep county swimming pools closed for the rest of 2020, ratifying a decision reached in their May 11th meeting. That decision came in Tuesday's meeting of the Commissioner's Court after a lengthy discussion. Even though Texas Governor Greg Abbott has relaxed the state ruling to allow up to 50% occupancy of area pools, the commissioners stayed the course to keep local pools closed. Several issues were raised regarding the reopening. Each commissioner weighed in on the issue. Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, who has the responsibility for the Hill Park pool, said, quote, "We would be turning away half of the people, and how do you keep social distancing? Pools are important, but it isn't practical to try to police that. How would we do it?" End quote. Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms said, quote, "I would love to open. While we could open, the pools would need to be painted to keep algae under control like we do every year. It takes 4 weeks to order and get the paint. There is no way we could open before the 1st of July." End quote. Nelms oversees the pools in Wicket and Piute. Tino Sanchez, Precinct 1 Commissioner, who oversees the Barstow pool, said, quote, "It would put too much pressure on the lifeguards to try to police keeping under 50%. How would they do that? I'm fine with keeping them closed." End quote. Dexter Nichols, Precinct 3 Commissioners, echoed the comments of his counterparts. Quote, "It would be very hard to do. How would you control it? Tell people they can only stay in for an hour, and who would keep count of patrons to keep it under 50%? End quote. Nichols deals with the Grand Falls pool. County Judge Greg Holley led the discussion on the loosening of the other COVID-19 restrictions. Holley attended the meeting remotely from home because of illness to his son. Ward County Golf Course will now be open to all as long as rules are maintained to keep social distancing, small groups, and only one person per cart unless a second rider is a family member. Ward County facilities, including the Event Center, Coliseum, will remain closed through the end of June. Libraries can open per the discretion of the respective commissioners and librarians. The Senior Center will remain closed with takeout-only meals and home delivery available. Ballparks can open for practice effective May 31st. No spectators are allowed for the practices, and only one parent or guardian per player. Games may be played as of June 15th with spectators maintaining social distancing. The commissioners approved Holley's recommendations. Holley also updated the governor's directive for nursing home residents and employees to be tested 100%. The directive suggested that fire departments would do the testing. Quote, "That is not practical for a volunteer fire department. It was then thought our hospital employees could conduct the testing, but that was ruled out because of the risk to those employees, as they cannot afford to become infected and not be able to perform their prescribed duties here. The Odessa Fire Department, who has been conducting this testing in smaller communities, is equipped for it and will do the testing at Monahan's Focused Care." End quote. That testing was conducted on Tuesday afternoon. City to negotiate property status with Odessa College. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Just managing to assemble a quorum, the Monahan City Council met for the last time in May for a relatively short agenda. After approving previous minutes, the board considered agenda items regarding accepting cybersecurity training, city manager certifications, actions regarding East Monahan subdivision, street designation, and deliberations on real property. Meeting in closed session at the end of Tuesday's meeting, council members deliberated regarding real property, the Odessa College leased city building, and Old Edwards Elementary Gym. After returning to open session, the board authorized City Manager Rex Thee to begin negotiations with Odessa College regarding a long-term lease or sale of the building and possibly the old gym. According to Thee, the current agreement with the college requires them to pay the insurance and all maintenance costs. Quote, the 10-year lease will be up in August, and they definitely want to stay here and are looking into more of a long-term lease or to possibly buy the building, Thee added. Along with Thee, Councilmember Jeppy Wilson served as Mayor Pro Tem, and Councilmembers Calvin Carroll and Rudy Hernandez were all present. Mayor David Cuthbert and Councilmembers Richard Hawkins and Ivy Valenzuela were absent. In other business, Councilmembers acknowledged the completion of cybersecurity training program in compliance with House Bill 3834, which was signed by Governor Greg Abbott last June. Quote, the bill is aimed at strengthening the state's protection against cyber attacks, Thee said. Under House Bill 3834, employees and board members who have access to district computers and databases are required to receive annual cybersecurity training. The training must focus on forming information security habits and procedures that protect information resources. It must also teach best practices for detecting, assessing, reporting, and addressing information security threats. The Department of Information Resources, DIR, has been vetting and certifying training programs to ensure they meet the bill's requirements. In first readings, Ordinance 1278 was approved, which officially designates South Victor Avenue as a street name in the East Monahan subdivision. Freedom Fest canceled. One of Monahan's Chamber of Commerce's biggest events has been canceled due to the coronavirus pandemic. Chamber of Commerce Director Teresa Burnett made the announcement on Wednesday saying, quote, due to the COVID-19 pandemic that has invaded our country, and with all the social distancing and sanitizing policies put in place, along with many other communities, we feel that it is best for our community to protect your health and safety and cancel this year's Freedom Festival 4th of July activities, end quote. Quote, this was not an easy decision, but a necessary one when you consider all the things that go along with an event of this magnitude. We normally have around 5,000 people that attend the ceremony from all over the area. Many of our activities that go along with this event would not even be able to take place, Burnett added. The annual fireworks show at the Million Barrel Museum will be held as scheduled on July 4th, beginning at dusk. Spectators are asked to stay in their vehicles and to practice social distancing.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.